j'ai plumé la tête de mon alouette.
J'ai plumé la tête de mon alouette.
J'ai plumé la tête de la queue.
Hello and welcome to Nerd Kitchen. This is Max Devincy, and with me I have Ajit. Ajit, say hello.
Hello.
So today's episode is going to be on food, as all our episodes are, but it's going to be talking about Ayurveda and how we can bring Ayurveda into cooking and some of the nutritional aspects about it, some of the historical aspects, maybe going across cultures and cuisines and probably different regions to see how different foods or ingredients should be consumed or are advised to not be consumed depending upon your the type of the body you have. And all of this kind of presents itself in a very interesting concoction of almost having this Ayurvedic diet and the challenges, you know, in maintaining one or sustaining one or putting together one. Given these times that we are in, it's important we start looking at some of these other diets that are out there. And this is probably something that's really interesting from our own backyard. So why not just start with that? On that note, I wanted to let you know about our guest, but Ajit's going to introduce our guest. Ajit, take over.
Yeah, thanks, Max. Guys, we are super excited to have Amrita Kaur with us today. So before developing interest in food and how Ayurveda could be applied to food and, realizing what is the Ayurvedic way of eating, Amrita has also been an RJ and a journalist, so it'll be fun to know how that transition happened. But I think Amrita, she goes by Amrita of Life on Insta, and she has her own website, lifekirecipe.com, so do check it out. But not when you're hungry, because it's not a good thing to do. I've tried that and I've gotten super hungry. Because not only she makes great food, but she also styles them fantastically. So if you just go check out her webpage, it is ridiculously good stuff. So on that note, Amrita, please say hi to our listeners.
First of all, hi guys. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we're fabulous.
We are good. We are safe as we can be. I hope you are too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And hi, everyone who's listening. I'm Amrita. And as I said, from Radio Jockeying to now talking about Ayurveda, and there's also a lot of other things been, but yes, currently I'm really interested in finding more and learning more about Ayurveda and also applying it to my daily cooking. And I share that regularly on my Instagram and on my blog. Yeah.
So Amrita, why don't you start us off with probably on this, some of the question you probably answered in press and papers quite multiple times right now, but I'll still ask you the same rhetorical question: is how and why Ayurveda?
Actually, it's a very interesting question, because I don't know how it happened to me. I was when I turned 30. This is 4 years back, when I was actually selling bacon jam from home. I was doing home chefing, and my most famous product was a non-vegetarian product, and it was called OMG Bacon Jam. It was so popular. It would put me on the food map of the city in Bombay. And I got a lot of media coverage because of that. And in that year, I actually traveled a lot to explore about food, just to learn about different regional communities. And I had covered, so I had actually done a count. I had almost covered 21 states in that entire 1 year of exploring my food. So, I went to Chennai and Sikkim and Hyderabad and Aurangabad, and I went to Amritsar and Leh and Nagaland, and there were just so many cities that I covered, and this was specifically food trips where I was just going to learn about food. And that's when I think it also occurred to me that there is this so much depth in terms of how the recipes were made and what all does affect, every culture adapts to the newer ingredient or how it all changes. So I got super interested in learning that. I also learned that people have so much respect, especially when I went to Nagaland and Spiti Valley. That's when I realized that people have so much respect for even, let's say, the meats that they're getting, or they really take care of, they would use every single part of it. And there was just so much sense of community as well. And for me, I think it was kind of a question that I came back with, that what are we doing? What are we putting in our body? What is it doing to us? And I think as a, like, because I still did not find the answer, but as my first intuitive thing, I turned vegetarian just overnight. I just decided to turn vegetarian. And that also meant that stopping, like, making and selling my most popular product, which was the bacon jam. So this is what I did in June 2016 when I turned 30, is that I immediately turned vegetarian and I dropped bacon jam out. And then I was looking for something to learn more, to understand what can I do better to watch my health, because I also wasn't leading a quite healthy life. I had observed that all my life I've been this underweight kid and I would eat whatever and I'd never gain weight. And my metabolism was superb. My energy levels were max, like really always hyper. And then looking at 8-9 years later, I was like, you know, I had breathing issues, I had back pain issues regularly, and I didn't know what to do. So I decided to like just go and study. And my first choice was to, of course, go and study about modern nutrition, learn more into detail about vitamins and minerals and stuff like that, because everybody these days talks in that language, you know. And but that is the time one of my friend was going to an Ayurvedic doctor for her, it was for her treatment for her headaches. She had regular constant headaches. And then the Ayurvedic doctor told her about that her headache is coming from the acidity that she has. And the acidity is happening because of the stress she is going through. And I kind of really got intrigued by like how they like were able to pinpoint on that emotion which is causing this thing. And I was like, I want to learn more about it. I don't know where can I learn. So I started reading up more and I understood that. I realized that internet has a lot of scattered information in Ayurveda, a lot more scattered. And most of the content pieces that you see from about Ayurveda is actually done by Western people. So I also didn't know how to go about it. So then I looked up for courses and I ended up in Kerala for 1 month long course, which was on basics of Ayurveda nutrition. So the course was called Diploma of Ayurveda Nutrition Consultant. I knew that I didn't want to do it to get into consultancy, but I knew I wanted to apply it in my life. And because I was already teaching and was into food, I thought it'd be a great new thing to learn and apply it in that also. And that's what happened. Ayurveda found me, actually. It just chose me.
So Ayurveda, right, as I understand it, is being at peace with the elements. And that's something that resonates a lot with me as well. Because when people ask me, oh, are you agnostic? Are you an atheist? And, you know, are you spiritual? I am not any of these, but I'm at peace with the elements. I'm at peace with the elements around me. I feel, and that's my understanding of Ayurveda, is that you have, you know, your five elements, and as long as everything around that make up the universe, you know, that's air, water, space, fire, and earth, and as long as they are in balance, you're kind of doing well. That's my layman definition of it. So now, and this is where it becomes really interesting. And you'll obviously correct me, but I can't resist from saying this, is when I started reading a little bit about Ayurveda to understand as I was prepping for this podcast. And where it starts from is these doshas, where it says that, you know, the elements are believed to form three different doshas, which is like types of energy within your bodies. And each is responsible for a set of physiological functions. And this is where it was so exciting for me, because I'm like, okay, huh, now I like this. This is interesting. And the this is the part where, you know, we need your help to help us fill in the gaps, is that how does this work and how do we kind of figure out what kind of energy resonates closest with us, so that you know, we could do whatever we have to do as far as a diet, from a dietary perspective of avoiding or adding things, because that's the void that I'm trying to fill. Because from what I was reading, it seemed like a which friend's character are you quiz, or no, which Harry Potter character are you quiz, saying are you this and this, then probably you are a pitta or a vata. So, but that's a very lame and reading of it. So why did you share some more light in that?
Right. You're absolutely right. It actually, the dosha quiz kind of becomes like that only. There are a lot of questions that you ask. So the thing about at least the premise of Ayurveda is this, that yes, we all are made of all these Pancha Mahabhut, which is these five great elements. And it starts with space, and there's fire, there's air, and there's fire, there's water, and then earth. Meanwhile, tell me, Max, what have you understood from, or Ajit, from whatever you read on internet? Were you able to understand these elements? Because I've realized that it's a very, you know, most people who are non-believers of Ayurveda, they also think these are imaginary, right? Like these doshas are like a very hypothetical, like it's an imaginary thing. So they're not able to like believe it completely. Like how they will completely believe there is a proper, because of the modern science, of course, we've seen the shape of the heart, the lungs and everything. So it's more physical representation. Like people don't believe in chakras, right? Because it's not, it can't be seen. But people who believe, they believe that there are these chakras. So what do you guys thought of this?
No, I do, which is why when I introduced it, I said, doshas are responsible for physiological functions because it's not physical as such. It's the what kind of a person you are, right? So as I understood, at least from what I read, the doshas are a translation of what kind of a person you are. And if you are a certain kind of a person, like for me, it said I am like a pitta because I'm very decisive and hardworking and intelligent or things. So because I'm that kind of a thing, I'm a more fire and a water person. At first, yes, there is an ounce of skepticism, definitely. But once you kind of see, okay, they are putting you in. So, like I said, I made fun of the quiz because it's like a Harry Potter sorting hat kind of quiz. But once you put that, you see, yeah, I think it kind of fits. You know, these qualities I kind of have. It's the second part of the journey that I'm having some trouble in understanding. Mm-hmm. Is if I am this dosha, so how do these food groups, how do avoiding these food groups or adding these food groups help? Because the doshas, and then there are also these different tastes. Because our first episode actually is on tastes, and so we did all the five tastes. In fact, in that episode, we also mentioned that according to Ayurveda, there's also the sixth taste, which is astringent compared to just the five. So you have these six tastes now in Ayurveda, and that second part of the journey, like I said, their filling the blanks is kind of hazy to me. Is key where it says, if you're this dosha, then only these three tastes you should, do and not the other three. So then I'm like, acha, to zindagi jhand hai.
That could be confusing for someone new. Yeah, okay. Right? So actually, it meant basically you should favor those tastes because those tastes will balance it better.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that you can't have the next taste.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So that part of so it's more of understanding key, okay, why these three tastes I should, focus more on because of my body type. That connection I have not gotten yet because obviously this is only like a couple of days of reading, or in Ajit's case, half an hour of reading.
So thank you so much for asking that, because I do realize that there is a lot of information on the internet. And even when I was, before I went for this course, I was also kind of confused with the scattered information. But yes, this is true about the Panch Mahabhuta or the five great elements. That the Ayurveda, or actually just believe that everything in the universe, including us, are made of these five elements. And now the quantity of it, like how much fire or how much earth or how much space, and so quantity and the quality of it will define your prakriti or your body type, which is your Ayurvedic dosha, which we talk about. So while these doshas that we talked about in Ayurveda, which is Vata, Pitta and Kapha, also pronounced as Vata, Pitta and Kapha, because Sanskrit words are always written with A at the end. And while reading phonetics, you would end up reading them as A at the sign. So now they both are acceptable pronunciations. So what happens is these doshas are just not only the body types or Ayurvedic body types that, hey, let's say a space and air element person will have a Vata dosha, or a fire and water person will have a Pitta dosha, or a water and earth person will have the Kapha dosha. But there are also these doshas are also responsible for all the physiological functioning in our body. So that means all the, from your respiration to your blood circulation and digestion and every system that we've studied, they all are basically governed by these three doshas. So that also means that all of us have all three doshas. But of course, one will be more dominant than the other. And so we define it as the Ayurvedic body type. And the thing is, also the naming, now I think it's a little flawed because it's about the manifestation. They started calling it dosh because dosh in Hindi or a Sanskrit also means that's a problem area, right? So dosh, they call it dosh because they can, these doshas can get imbalanced very easily by our lifestyle, by what we are feeding us in, by the sleep patterns, by anything basically. So by calling them already dosh, they have actually become very like, it manifests into actually that they actually keep getting disturbed in our body. So it's super important to continue to really take care of balancing all the three doshas. But if you have a tendency to vitiate one of the doshas mainly, like let's say if you are a Pitta type, you have more fire elements, and if you continue to have more heaty things, more fiery things, then of course your Pitta dosha will get even more imbalanced. And you would see the result in the form of, it could be like probably in your skin in form of breakouts or pimples or acne or rashes or anything or redness. Or it could be in the form of, you know, like your psychological, that you'll feel more anger, you'll feel more rage, and you'll feel more irritable. Or inside you might have more ulcers or more acidity issues, acid reflux. So basically, every dosha that way, you'll see that when it gets imbalanced, there is a certain effect on our body. So by actually looking at our body, by looking at the signs, we can tell which dosha is getting vitiated right now. That's the best part. So that's about the basic about the how these five elements and the doshas work.
Amrita, I just wanted to build on something that you mentioned, I think before we actually started recording this episode, which is, you used to sell this extremely famous bacon jam, right?
Mm.
And you mentioned that practically overnight you went vegetarian because of the certain things that you learned and discovered about yourself. And I wanted to kind of tie this back to Ayurveda, because the thing is, in at least our culture, for the lack of better word, a lot of these things are intertwined, right? Our history and Ayurveda, you know, the myths like Mahabharata, Ramayana, they all have a very strong connection to them, because a lot of the examples that we quote happen to be from these two very famous myths in our culture, being Ramayana and Mahabharata. And the reason why I'm mentioning these sort of seemingly disjointed things is that, you know, when I think of Ayurveda, it usually talks about a vegetarian diet. And I think you yourself said that you went vegetarian. Whereas when I look at just basic Indian data on dietary habits, I realize that majority of the people in our country are not strict vegetarians. They consume meats across varying degrees. This also depends on the region where they live. And of course, there are also other cultural, religious beliefs, etc., that I don't want to delve deep into. Not only this, I think the other thing that is also these days sort of subdued is the fact that there is very explicit mention of meat consumption, even in these myths, in Mahabharata, in Ramayana. I remember, I mean, even before reading up for this show, I do remember the fact that there is explicit mention of, you know, Yudhishthira hosting a feast that involved, you know, barbecuing meat and so on and so forth. So to cut a long story short, does Ayurveda like propagate eating vegetarian food, or is there room for meat and eggs as well?
Actually, I this is a perception, because I know that every time when I speak to people and I tell them my story that I turned vegetarian and then I moved towards Ayurveda, people actually think that they mix these two and they say that, oh, you're vegetarian because you follow Ayurveda. And that's not true. I turned vegetarian 6 months before I actually entered Ayurveda field. Ayurveda actually has all the, like, there's a whole text on the whole mask varga, which is the food which comes into the meat categories. And also understand this, Ayurveda texts were written in Sanskrit, and were addressed to kings. It was written to basically kings and royalties, right? So you would see that there is a lot of mention on each game meat as well. That what kind of, you know, it's a black boar, or if it's, let's say, this, if it's a different thing. So there were all the mentions of all the meats, basically. So you would come across, while of course a vegetarian food is kind of, I think that connects, because a lot of people also think that Ayurveda also means no onion garlic. That means only sattvic khana. It's not necessary. Ayurveda is basically principles that gives you a little more understanding of each and everything. So in terms of Ayurveda, like in terms of meats, so the healthiest meat that Ayurveda would say to consume is the goat meat. That's the health for us. This is of course written in the text, but it also was mentioned, and one of my teachers had been telling me about this, that because the muscles or the way the goat meat is, it's very close to our human bodies actually. So that's why it nourishes us so much. So you would see like the paya soup that we always, whenever there was a fracture or like a bone injury, we were always given this bone broth or a paya soup. Because the bones or the cartilages or all that the thing that we need is already present in the goat meat, so it really used to heal us so much. For example, even the people with like a lot of like a knee pains, people have like a lot of joint pain. So the fat of the pork is actually used as an Ayurvedic remedy to apply externally. Which we very happily used to fry our potatoes in with the bacon fat. But it actually is a very good remedy for your joint pains and all. So there is a lot of like detailed mention of meats in the Ayurveda text. And the thing is, while vegetarian diet is also promoted because it's easier for our body to digest it. And I think before we get into the other topics, one thing is very like simple what Ayurveda talks about is the whole focus is all on digestion. At least I'm talking about the food part. Ayurveda believes that everything that we eat, so we are not what we eat. We are what we can digest or what we can't digest. Every small thing, whenever we are eating, if we are not able to digest properly, what will happen is the undigested food particles that are still in our body, they will start fermenting inside and they will cause something called ama, which is basically means, you have to convert it to a modern nutrition language, it's basically toxins in our body. And it's believed that all the root causes of all the diseases are these ama only. So if you keep your internal system, the digestion system clear, you will not have any diseases. That's what Ayurveda believes. And so the whole focus always is on digestion and on your Agni. Agni is a fire, and especially the Jathar Agni, which is your digestive fire. So basically, all we're doing is working for our digestion each and every day. So if a vegetarian diet, and which is a proven fact that a vegetarian diet is easy to digest for our body, the absorption, the breaking down, the assimilation, all of that happens much quicker than actually eating the non-vegetarian food. So that ways, if you understand this, then vegetarian diet, that's why it's promoted so much more than actually a non-vegetarian food. And I don't know, in India, there is also a little problem in terms of, because I'm really interested in mythology. I like stories. I really love listening to, or watching the stories in mythology. And I started incorporating those stories in my pop-ups. So I actually, like, for example, when I had a pop-up in August last year, I did a Janmashtami special where I did infused white butters because it is Krishna's food. And I created that whole Gopal Kala, which is also like a dish, which is especially made for Janmashtami. I created a dish called Vanvas, which was my take on like my favorite stories from Ramayana, during the Diwali time. So I kind of really like stories. Yeah. So what I understood during that Vanvas, especially that research, is, there are so many theories. People, like, while it's very clear, so in Ramayana, there are also a lot of types of Ramayana, the Valmiki's Ramayana to, like, different, Ramayans. And what happens is that in some, it's clearly mentioned that, when they were on exile, the Ram, Sita and Lakshman, they're dependent on the meats, right? And so they would, and even the whole Ravan story of that, how he posed that deer is because looking at a deer, Sita craved for deer meat. So she asked the Ram to go and get it. So, but now we've gotten to that point, and I think it also because that we are now as in India moving to all a very like a strong right wing kind of a thing that they don't want to believe that our gods could eat non-vegetarian food, So they've started like thinking that and by watching that whole Ramayana series that came in early 90s and also, I think they kind of like skipped the whole part of that. They've stopped acknowledging that our gods could eat non-vegetarian food, and they did. So that is also one thing that now it's propagated that we're all vegetarian, we're Indians supposed to be vegetarian. While there have been also like studies and proven that there are more non-vegetarians than actually vegetarians in India as well. So I think if we start accepting it more openly, we'll actually be probably end up with actually much better health, because then we'll actually be able to also demand for a better meat quality, for a better, for better nutrition from these sources as well. Right now, it's just like, we're just following that whole, again, demands and supply chain and with the whole antibiotics and steroids and all of that given to the meats so that they grow very quickly, and especially with chicken, the way that the things has happened to broiler chicken. I think I got put off with all that information as well about broiler chicken, that how it has now broilers will never get an organic certification. Actually, for a chicken, to get an organic certification is only very difficult. You only get free-range chickens in here, but you don't need it to be organic so easily. So that's the thing. That's the perception about Ayurveda. But there is a lot more information in there. And it said that Vata people who have more, who have like kind of irregular digestive fire. Some days they're super strong. Sometimes they don't like eat that much. So for them, on those days, eating a heavy meat will be a very difficult thing for them. It will be very challenging. So probably for them, if we can have it in a easier digestible form, like probably in a soup form or a stew form or a curry form, it'll be much easier for them to actually get nourished by it. And Vata people needs nourishment more than anything, because they're usually thin, and they're mostly, they could be weak, and their bones are not as strong as compared to other doshas. And if you look at Kapha dosha, whose digestion is pretty slow, metabolism is slow, and if they end up eating a lot of non-vegetarian, then it will be very difficult for them to even lose weight, and because weight is always an issue with Kapha dosha. So then it could be a problem, because the non-vegetarian will take much longer time to even bake down that. But with Pitta people, because they are these kind of people who are like super hungry, like they get hungry very easily. Every 2-3 hours, their body is already digested the food that it eaten. So for them, a non-vegetarian food still works, because it gives them a longer thing to work on. But then again, with non-vegetarian food also comes that heat with it. So their body, which is already heaty, also brings more heat in the body. So then they feel even more, a lot of like problems if they're not able to digest that properly. So that is the reason why a vegetarian diet is always advised. But I would recommend, if you are a non-vegetarian person, then you must continue, like try to like have slow cooked and longer cooked and soups and stews and curries, that kind of non-vegetarian food, more than like a like grilled meats, or like at least also medium rare, and all of that will of course not work for either. The cow beef is considered the most unhealthiest meats of all. So the goat meat is healthiest, and cow beef is the unhealthiest as per Ayurveda, because it's super heavy for our body.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that, Amrita, because whatever limited reading I was doing, it did mention that, you know, chicken and stuff like that was not really the preferred meat that is mentioned in at least whatever I was reading. And the other thing that I'm taking away is that I don't think I need to take the quiz anymore, but I can clearly identify with the Pitta tendency, because I do get very snacky every 3 hours. So I already know my basic dosha that I need to address to Ayurveda. But I think the broader point that I'm taking away from this conversation is that, see, it's like a series of guidelines. Because anytime we try to associate something in its absolute way, like, you know, if I start thinking like, you know, oh, Ayurveda told me this, and I did exactly this, and I did not lose 5.67 kilos in a matter of 4.8 days, therefore Ayurveda sucks. That's not the way to go about it. It's like, it's a set of guidelines, it's a set of recommendations, and the extent to which it works for you is something that you have to figure out eventually. So it's a bit like Google Maps in one way. You are at a starting point, you want to reach a destination. It will give you multiple ways to reach that destination depending on traffic. And as you embark on that journey, the traffic could change. Especially in a beautiful city like Bangalore, traffic changes all the time, right? So let us say it tells you you're going to reach the destination in 1 hour, 5 minutes. If you reach the destination in 55 minutes instead, which never happens in Bangalore, but still, you'll be like, wow, Google Maps is the best thing ever. But on the other hand, if that 1 hour, 5 minutes becomes 1 hour, 15 minutes, you're like, Google Maps sucks. I don't even know what the hell these people are developing. It's all bullshit. But what we need to understand is that there's a lot of anecdotal info and data lot of past data based on history that has gone into this to build this. So it gives you an approximation. So you have to take it in that spirit. You can't like nitpick on every single aspect and say this sucks or this is awesome. It's like, guys, these are broad guidelines. These should work for the most part. So we hope this works for you. In case it doesn't, at least try to take the positives that, hey, I at least reached my destination. I didn't know this way at all. So let's appreciate the positive elements and have an open mind to, you know, be open about it. It's pretty much my takeaway from all this.
Yeah.
Matt, you want something to add?
I wanted to say that it's not a surprise that you are a Pitta. I know I am, which is why we are doing this podcast, because we are two peas in a pod.
Wow.
But it was interesting when you mentioned about the gamey meets Amrita, because I can see where it comes from also, which is why, like maybe something like a deer or a rabbit also, because they are easier to digest compared to boar or cow, or you know, those kinds of meats. Those are probably more preferred. And maybe I'm guessing fish is also preferred because it's easier to digest compared to these red meats.
So fish is actually considered a little heavy also, by the way, because it's oily in nature. It's considered kapha increasing. Well, all the meats are, but fish is considered a little heavy than actually we assumed it to. Yeah.
So the way that I'm understanding then is that the Ayurvedic diet is encouraging whole foods, right? You're encouraging whole foods. You're probably advising against, or you're advising to minimize processed foods, and it kind of follows, like nowadays, you know, it's pretty popular here, at least in the West, is this whole paleo diet where they say, you know, eat like the cavemen did. Now the Ayurvedic diet is not saying eat raw meat. It's saying you eat cooked meat or cooked vegetables, or trying to break them down because we're focusing more on the digestive portion of it. So we're saying cook things down so that it's easier to digest and there is less of excretion, which, you know, as you said, you know, is releasing toxins and so on. Now, the part I wanted to go into before we go to the tastes and other things is that now, based on these, some people may feel that following an Ayurvedic diet, because, you know, there is obviously an extensive list of foods that you're advised to avoid or advised to eat, but it could also mean cutting out some of the food groups that you like a lot, just because they aggravate specific doshas. So some people can feel this is overly restrictive and less flexible than some of the other popular diet plans that are out there in the market today.
True. That's actually kind of very true. So one of the, like, I know it's not a food group, but one thing that I have a grief against is that ice creams, man. I miss ice creams. I love the fact. I used to like remember that I used to indulge in eating ice creams without any guilt, without having that knowledge that it's wrong, right? Now that I know, I feel guilty about it. When I eat ice cream, I do still eat ice cream. And I like, okay, then I was like, okay, if I've had this right now, then what can I do to like balance it right away, you know? So I know that this is one thing that I miss. Other than that, actually for me, it's been really like amazing, because just turning vegetarian before that only had also given me a lot more understanding of, you know, that whole actually do it more of enthusiasm to explore all the other vegetables as well. When I was growing up in this family, in a Punjabi family, like we of course used to eat non-veg as well a lot, and mostly chicken. But I always, even as a kid, I never liked chicken as much. I always like mutton only whenever it was made at home. But of that time I had heard that mutton was more heavier than chicken, so chicken khao. So only when I later understood that mutton is actually more nourishing than chicken, then I would have continued, but I'd already turned vegetarian. So I started exploring a lot of other vegetables, because we didn't ever go beyond gobi, aloo, matar, and do-teen sabziyan. And only now that I was in Bombay, and there's so much of availability of beautiful ingredients and which are used in different regional recipes, that I understood. First time I'm eating, you know, when as a kid we used to learn about leafy greens, there was nothing else beyond palak for me. Because, acha chalo, sarso in the winter season. But when I got exposed to this whole leafy greens in Bombay, my mind was blown that there's so much more. And of course, when I came, then I keep coming to Indore and I was visit markets, I would see, yes, yahan pe bhi tha, hamare ghar mein hi nahi tha sir. We only didn't get it here. You know, so there is a, so I saw that a huge shift had happened in my life because I became much more open to trying new things. And then all of these other greens from Gongura to your chalai and a lot of different bhajis and all, they all became my favorite. And I start looking at like trying to incorporate newer and newer things and in a more interesting way. You know, so I would make my pesto in my workshops. I would make pesto out of gongura patta, and it with its own natural sourness, and it tastes so beautiful. So in one of the Baba Pan did that. I served a moringa pesto on a, like a cracker and bok and chini and all of that, right? So I'm trying to also marry these two things, where finding out what is local and what is seasonal, and then you know, work it in a way that it also is super presentable and people find it more palatable. Rather than I tell them that I don't eat gumbura dal khao, you know? So that's what I'm trying to do. But this is what I feel, that there's a lot of things to learn there. And it's just like a full, big, vast ocean. The deeper you go, you learn, you'll keep learning more and more. But I don't think it is super restrictive anymore, because if you learn the principles, then you can apply it and then you'll be able to understand it better. So even if I do mistakes, let's say as per Ayurveda, even if I do wrong combinations, I also immediately would, like, let's say I know that I've eaten something which is not going to suit me, something which is heavy or something, let's say, which is too spicy, then I will also counter effect with it. I will have, for example, adding the fresh dhania on our Indian sabzis or the masalas, that whatever we make, is not only because it also is a great garnish, but it also is because dhania is actually cools down your pitta. So it's so cooling, it's refreshing. It brings down. So what happens is the masalas that you're going to eat, it's already like creating a little balance in there. So all the recipes, our traditional Indian recipes, are kind of in sync with those principles. So even if I have ended up eating something spicy, if I know this, that, okay, it's probably going to hurt me, you know, my body won't be able to take it. Either I will feel next day very discomfort while passing the feces, or maybe I will feel acne or a breakout or something, then I can immediately also give myself something cooling. I can have like a coconut milk or something, or I can have like a buttermilk chas or something which can counter effect it. So that's why in my workshops, that's what I try to tell people, that don't take it as like a super restrictive, but try to adapt to it and learn the principles. Then you can apply it to anything. So, and even if you're eating fancier, your imported food, or, you know, your avocado toast to your different kind of smoothies and everything, then you can still learn to apply it in your body. And while you chose the word about whole foods, I would say Ayurveda, I know it's another buzzword these days, but Ayurveda, if I have to literally translate it to one concept, it's going to be mindfulness. Because what you are eating, where it's coming from, how are you cooking it down, who is, even like to point where, who is serving it to you, where is, what source it's coming from, and then what season are you having it in, what time of the day are you having that food, all, and then when you are having it, what are you having it along with, and then how much meal gap you have given for a next spoon. All of this basically becomes Ayurveda, the parameter of learning about the Ayurveda nutrition, basically. So the word that really goes with this is the whole mindfulness aspect of it. Being in a constant, like, always been awareness that what are you eating and how is it affecting your body, you know? So that's the word I'd go with, yeah.
So Amrita, just one thing I wanted to pick up here is, you mentioned the concept of which season, so the relevance of the season, right? And at least, so let me dial back the clock, you know, like 20 years. I think I'm probably the oldest among the lot. So let me dial the clock back a bit. When I was growing up, there was a clear concept of summer and winter vegetables, like phulgobi, mutter, gajar. They were strictly winter. You won't see much of that in summer. In contrast, summer, you see all the useless vegetables like tinda, vinda and all that. I mean, I love them now, but when I was growing up, I just despised those vegetables. So, again, so certain things And now, of course, you get everything round the clock. Like you go, I mean, now if I go to my bhaji wala, bhaji wali, you see very nice cauliflower actually, right? So it, things have changed. But now if we, so how do you adapt? I think you already touched upon that in many ways. But okay, so if we speaking strictly, some things are available in summer, some things are not available in summer. And that's true for winter also. So, yeah. And so how does Ayurveda incorporate that element? Why stuff like Tinda, etc. Is better suited in summer, apart from the obvious fact that it's available only during summer. So is it in those vegetables or stuff like that? That would be good.
So this is what I've understood. So I haven't gotten a complete hang of things that were, at least in past, they were winter vegetables or summer ones. Because again, as I said, there was no like so much awareness, even at my own end or in at least when I was growing up. But from what I've understood while reading about this and now experiencing this in last 3-4 years, is that Ayurveda believes that, for example, any fruit or like when a plant bear flower and then the fruit comes out. So it, depending on what it is, it of course needs a different kind of season as well. So when, for example, you know, when you have like January, February that we start seeing kairi, the raw mangoes, for example. You know, when January is when the Uttarayan starts, when the sun is in a north position. And we celebrate mid-January as a Uttarayan festival also. And that is the time when the season changes and we have early winters from mid-January till mid-March, which is called Shishir Ritu in Ayurveda. And then after the Shishir Ritu comes the Vasant Ritu in mid-March. And this is when the, you know, how the Himalaya, like the snow peaks in Himalaya starts melting. And similarly, it said that the kapha in our body, and because in the winters, we've given ourselves a lot of fattening things, a lot of dry fruits to keep us warm. So our pinnies or our laddus or the gajar ka halwas and all the amazing winter things that we had. So now that whatever the kapha is in the body, whatever excess there is. So in the summer, in the spring season, in the Vasant Ritu, it starts liquefying. The way snow also starts melting because of the sun position. That's what happens in our body also. And then during spring, that's why spring is considered as a great detoxing season. And that's why you'd see the spring season starts with our Navratri festival. Yeah, where we go 9 days fasting. Of course, the other Navratris come later during Dashera Diwali ki time pe. But this is one Navratri that happens because our body needs that cleansing this time. So the principles that are in our festivals are also very in sync with what Ayurveda believed in. So, of course, now it's also very unfortunate that we end up overeating actually during these festivals and fasting. So we are not really doing the purpose of it. So, but otherwise, after the spring season, you'd see that the Grishma Ritu comes. So whatever with the amount of the heat that comes, and that's why the fruit will become from the raw stage to it will ripen it well because it will getting that kind of sunshine. So a raw mango will only turn into a ripe mango when it will have that much of heat coming from the sun, right? That's when the fruit will become the proper food, which is suitable for consumption. And so that applies for all the fruits. So some fruits will need lesser of sun, which could be or even winter vegetables, which doesn't need so much of harsh sun. And if you or vegetables, even when I'm saying fruit, I also mean the vegetable because vegetable technically are also like fruit that way. You know, that basically phal hai wo jo hume plant se mil raha hai. And then you have even after the Grishma Ritu comes the Varsha Ritu, which starts in mid-June. So during the Varsha Ritu, you know that because there is so much of rains and what happens is also the heat that is trapped in the earth, it all starts coming out. So initial, that's why the first week of monsoon, everybody feels little discomfort in terms of digestion. They feel vata imbalance because there's a movement happening. So a lot of old injuries, old wounds, they start hurting. Right? And so you see, like, there's a lot of vata imbalance. There's also pitta imbalance, but vata imbalance comes more in the monsoon time. And mid-July, the Sharad Ritu starts, which goes on till mid-September. So the Sharad Ritu is the autumn season. Then again, if you look at the environment, the clouds are clear. Now the sun rays are again directly reaching us. That means the weather again gets a little hot for us to handle. The pitta will again rise. and we'll feel, so that's why, you know, the October heat becomes a very difficult time to deal with. You are prepared in the summer season for heat. You're not prepared in that season. And then after the Sharad Ritu comes your Hemant Ritu, which is the early winters, when your body is, so after, actually technically after the Varsha Ritu, your sun starts going in the Dakshinayan. So the last 3 months, which is your Sharad Ritu and your Hemant Ritu and Shishir Ritu, so they are like then considered as more of cooling seasons, more of more when the sun is in lesser in power and you have more energy in body. So that's why, so Hemant Ritu is where you will again start filling yourself up, eating more food so that your body can cope up with that much of heat, that much of winter outside, and can give you that warmth. And then you again, it's so again the cycle starts where the other seasons start. So understanding these seasons gives us a little more perspective of what happens to our body as well. And accordingly, then we eat as per what is available in the market, or in the, at least in the, and the problem with the market is that because of the whole agriculture advancement and all the hybrid seeds that have come up, that now they have started defining that, achha, tomato hai, toh mujhe itna lal chahiye, aur itna khatta hona chahiye, ya itna meetha hona chahiye. So they've started making seeds in a way, in a hybrid way, that now everything is super controlled. These, the crops that we get throughout the year, which is technically, so even the tomatoes, if you look at, you see the tomatoes that come, the desi tomato that come during the, you know, the January, February, that time, they're rounder and they have that green tops intact, right? And then if you look at the tomatoes that come throughout the year, they are not as flavorful and they have, they're more oval in shape. And they could also be very, very yellowish color, you know, yellowish, orangish color. So that's why, so if you look, so of course, there's a huge stark difference in the produce that you'd get in organic produce, because they wouldn't use hybrid seeds. They would use a lot more sustainable practices and they'll depend a lot on season. So that's why now this understanding why are we going organic, not only, the reason is not only that because it's only chemical and pesticides free. It is also in sync with the Ayurveda, with at least, not Ayurveda, with at least the seasonal principles. And then taking from the earth and, you know, giving it back to the earth and nourishing the soil so much that it becomes much more nutrient dense as well. And actually in last 2-3 years, Maharashtra, for example, has seen wet famine as well and a dry famine as well. And they are saying that the hybrid jo produce hai, it didn't sustain so well during this famines. While if you look at the indigenous varieties of the grains, the rices or the jawars and different wheats and all, they actually were able to sustain and they were able to adapt to that, the climatic situation that came and were able to like get us just the same, almost similar kind of produce that they would have gotten. So that's the biggest thing also, because we have started playing with the nature, the way we've started really defining this and started deciding the code of these genetic codes of these, the plants and the fruits and vegetables that we're eating. So that's why more and more ailments are happening. More and more people are getting disconnected with the idea of seasonality and the lines are getting blurred. Even in Bombay, you'd see that you get watermelon throughout the year. You get raw mango throughout the year, man. So I'm like, what is even happening? Supposed to have it for the year because if it's available, what do I do? And I don't want to waste food, so I don't know what to do with it. But just becoming more mindful will also help. And in my workshop, I get people from, like, let's say people who are in like Dubai and like Singapore and places where they don't have that much sense of like local food or seasonal food. The foods are all coming from like around, you know, they're all importing their lot of produce. So then what to do in that cases? So the only, and there is no mention in anything in Ayurveda like that, right? Because 5,000 years back, they didn't even know that the world will shrink so much that we will get our produce so instantly also, that today, agar aaj yahan pe avocado paka hai, in 5 days, it will reach India or in any part of the world, you know? So while they didn't know that, they didn't even know that refrigeration will be invented one day. So of course, refrigerated food is not allowed in Ayurveda technically, but they didn't know that it's going to happen. For that matter, tomatoes and potatoes and chilies, those things that came later in India were not like, so while there are nightshades family which tomatoes belong to, we talked about nightshades in Ayurveda, but otherwise tomatoes ke baare mein aapko original Sanskrit text nahi mil payega shayad. But you can still apply those principles to it and understand that what will it suit, whose body will it suit. So what I tell these people who do not have access or who have not understanding of seasonality, to just then become even more mindful that what is that thing when you're eating, what is it doing to your body? So learning that, are you like comfortable with it? Is your stomach okay with it? Are you able to get the nourishment that you intend to get out of it? So that's the thing only that can help in this time. But otherwise, speaking to organic farmers and connecting to them will give you more idea of what we should eat and what we should avoid. But thankfully, some fruits, some vegetables are still very seasonal. For example, mangoes, you'll have to still wait for the summers to come. And right now, for example, if you have jamun and lychee, green banana right now is in season. Because of the lockdown, I don't have access to any of these amazing summer produce. But otherwise, there is such beautiful produce that comes right now. And the reason they come right now, for example, a lauki or a tinda becomes much more favorable this season because they have so much of water content, right? Cucumber has so much water content. And that's why your body, which is right now getting all dehydrated because of the harsh sun, the pitta is too much outside. So we need our body, we need it to hydrate it, right? And that's why these things really come in place and they help us balance it better. Your mangoes also are cooling in nature. Of course, then we start overeating it and then it causes problem. Then people are saying that they have skin issues and all of that. But otherwise, if you eat everything in moderation and in the right way, it will all suit us so well. So yeah, that's about seasonality, my idea of my opinion about this. Yeah.
That was part one of our episode on Ayurveda with Amrita. Catch us soon on part two as we deep dive into Ayurveda and how you can incorporate it into daily cooking without having to go overboard. For the Nerd Kitchen, this is Max and Ajit signing off. We'll be back with part two really soon, so keep listening.